Blog Talk Radio.
I had to bring mom in on this one.
Anybody grateful for God's blood?
Tell them about it, man.
Oh, the blood that saved me, the blood that raised me, the blood that healed me.
Yes.
Hello?
Listen.
Thank you for the blood.
The blood that saved my life. And thank you for the lamb.
Thank you for the lamb. Oh, the lamb that was sacrificed.
I'm so glad.
Everyone, you're listening to Show Talk with Angela Butler. Today, the interview is a follow-up interview with Ms. Shante McLaughlin. Ms. Shante McLaughlin lost her child in sex trafficking in Atlanta, Georgia. Human trafficking, I'm sorry, in Atlanta, Georgia. How are you doing, Ms. McLaughlin?
I'm well. How are you?
I'm doing okay. How are you doing?
I'm doing quite well. Yeah.
Okay. All right. So how's everything going? Are things looking up? Have you found your children? Have there been any searches?
So, no, I haven't found my children. I was on a podcast show, and someone saw me there, and then they referred me to someone, and then they referred me to someone, and then they referred me to someone, which resulted in a PR firm coming on board, and they're launching a one-year campaign. There's a group of black male advocates and activists who are underwriting a one-year campaign. So it actually is... At this point, a collaborative effort. There's about, four organizations from all over the U.S. who have come together with their different resources. Some I can't disclose out loud right now at this juncture, but they've all come together with all of their resources to be able to help me find my children and to help launch an investigation.
Okay, that is good. That is good. That is great. That's what you want, is that
good? Yes, definitely. Definitely.
All right. So that started. How are you doing though? Have you had any more threats?
I mean, I hadn't had any threats recently. Those threats were about 2 to 3 years ago. I hadn't had any recent threats.
Yes, you don't need to disclose your location like that when you get on interviews and things. All right. So you're on Show Talk with Angela Butler. You have several PR firms that have come together to help you find your children. So will there be infomercials or commercials or billboards?
No. So it's a single PR firm, and it is a couple of collaborations, other organizations who work around like human trafficking and child trafficking and things like that. So there will be some interviews with mainstream media, legislation, a podcast, a town hall special, newspaper articles. It's the whole year PR campaign.
Okay. All right, is that going to be in Atlanta or is that all over America?
All over America.
All over America. Well, somebody's bound to know something.
Yes. Yes.
Is that an award?
Ma'am, I didn't hear you.
Is that an award if anybody can tell you where your children are at?
No, I mean, there's no way to identify this. So first of all, no, there will be no reward, because anyone who has any information into the whereabouts of my children, if they knew something about it, then they'd probably be more of an accomplice. And I am committed that any and all people who had anything to do with the disappearance of my children or any of these other children from the hospital or from the detention center, that they're held accountable. And they don't get a cop out. They don't get to say, "Oh, it was my friends. It wasn't me." No, it was you too, because my children are 7 years old right now. So there will be no throwing somebody under the bus to save themselves. Mm-mm.
All right, there'll be no throwing anybody under the bus to save themselves. Okay. So your children are 7 years old.
Seven right now, and. Like I said, because, you know, my children were taken at 2 days old while I was in the care of the Fulton County Women's Detention Center right after I gave birth at Grady Hospital. So between the hospital administration and the police department, it had to be someone inside of law enforcement who was a part of the organizing. And I get the threat, I get peer pressure, I get all of that. But if I would have dropped this conversation, then whoever today may feel the need to be a whistleblower, if I would have dropped it, then they wouldn't care. They'd keep right on selling babies. So because I'm not dropping it, because I'm not going away, that's what I mean by there will be no throwing the next person under the bus. Like, I would like to hope to think that the thought of selling a two-year-old baby morally would be enough to have them say, this isn't something I want to be a part of, no matter what the ramifications of their actions. But if they don't have enough guts to stand something like that, then hopefully the thought of prison is enough to scare them.
Okay, the ramifications. All right, so your children were 2 years old when they were taken. Two years old or 2 days old, Ms. McLaughlin?
They were 2 days old. They were 2 days old when they were taken.
And it's been 7 years. Somebody has your children. Hopefully it's somebody that's not. Hopefully it's somebody who just really wanted to have a child.
Yes. And that's all that we can pray for.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh,
even though that's wrong and it's illegal and it's horrible. But they did, but hopefully situation. I know it sounds horrible of me, but hopefully that's the situation. It's not anything worse than that. I know you want
the
children. I know you want the children. So how are you?
I do want my children.
So how are you?
Pretty good. Pretty good. I've been healing, resting, a lot of healing and resting. So I know that this conversation is bigger than me and my children, and I know that it's just getting started. So I'm glad, I'm grateful that I have the opportunity to just rest because we're just starting February and the PR firm is with me through the end of December. But there's a couple of other things lined up, like a documentary, like a book, and to know that – and to know that while we're looking at bringing home my babies, I'm sure we'll be able to help bring home some other people's babies as well. And I hope that I can spend my life helping to bring home babies, as well as just fighting corruption and injustice.
Were you ever able to get in touch with Senator Ossoff?
No. Well, I didn't try because shortly after our last interview is when I was put in conversation with the PR firm, and I did plan on getting in touch with Ossoff. I've met Ossoff, and so I have direct access to him. Warnock, I've spoken at his church before, and I have his, you know, I have all of his people's contact and things like that. So those aren't difficult people for me to reach out to. But with the PR firm, there's a couple of things that we have lined up around legislation. And so I understand the importance of timing as well. So there's some things that we needed to put together, and we've been, well, actually, they've been working to put some things together. There's a couple of other officials as well, because, like I said, we don't have time for anybody throwing anybody under the bus, and we want to make sure that we do all of our checks and balance to make sure that we don't leave any stone unturned in this conversation around bringing home our babies.
So Grady Hospital in Georgia did this.
Yes. And the police department. Fulton County, which is Atlanta.
Yes. So your babies.
Yes.
That's horrible. This is horrible. No remorse.
Yes.
A mother.
No remorse. No investigation to this. The governor is aware of it. So that's what I mean. Like, Ossoff is one thing, but when you have a governor, it's weird. I know for a fact that the governor knows my story because his wife knows my story, and she showed him the video. And when he found out about my story, he had someone call me to do a wellness check to make sure that my mental health was fine instead of launching an investigation. And even with them, they suggested to him that he should do an investigation into my missing children. And that was about 2 to 3 years ago, and he still hasn't done an investigation.
The governor has not.
The governor has not. So I was, you know, it was my intention to reach out to Ossoff and having conversations with the PR firm because they're not out of Atlanta. They're not out of Georgia. They're actually out of the DMV area, D.C., Maryland, Virginia. And because they aren't as close, they're, I think it's easier for them to be a little more objectionable and see things from a different perspective. And they're just like, you know, we got to get a few more people involved in this conversation. So we do plan on reaching out to both Ossoff and Warnock, but there's a couple of other elected officials from some different states who we think to come together to actually make an impact instead of relying on two elected officials in a state that doesn't even have the support of the governor to really go forward with this conversation.
Oh, okay. All right. Okay, with this conversation. Okay. I just know that Ossoff, when we last talked, was into was getting into human trafficking and was in Senate, in the middle of the Senate, and was talking about human trafficking there in Atlanta, Georgia, and Georgia area of children during the Super Bowl and things like that, the human trafficking of foster care children and their abuse and things like that. So I thought maybe you had contacted him.
He has been in that conversation. And I, like I said, I was intending to contact him, but Governor Kemp, his wife, human trafficking is her cause. They actually have a special task force that was created around human trafficking. So years ago, I was in conversation with the special task force. I've been in conversations with a group who worked directly with the director of that task force. So he knew my story for at least 4 years now. So when Marty Kemp, who's Governor Kemp's wife, heard of my story, I thought that would be a breakthrough. And so I planned on, based off of our last conversation, going to Ossoff, but like I said, the PR firm, and having conversations and then being able to see things a little different. They were like, we might need to take this case a little further than Georgia. because if you keep it stuck in Georgia going back and forth through the Georgia elected officials, it's not going to go anywhere. So it's not saying that Ossoff or Warnock or any of them are corrupt. I definitely am not saying that. What I'm saying is you can only go as far as you can go. So in Georgia, the governor, Governor Kemp, Trump, Ossoff and Warnock. And if we can't get the governor to get on board, then what difference does it make if I go to Ossoff or Warnock? They can't get, I mean, if his wife can't get him to investigate, this is the lady that he sleeps next to every night. So, or whoever is pulling his strings, because I'm not going to say it's the governor. I'm just going to say this is a bigger conversation than I think that it's just a bigger conversation that I stepped into. You know, I'm not an activist. I'm an advocate, and I'm a mother with two missing children. And somewhere in here, this conversation has taken, you know, it has its own force behind it, and it's just a much larger conversation at hand.
I know.
It's bigger than Atlanta, and it's bigger than the state of Georgia.
Okay, it's bigger than the state of Georgia. I know Ms. King, Ms. Bernice King was there in Atlanta talking about human trafficking on her father's birthday when she was on Fox Soul.
No.
So, you know, I really hope you get your children back. I'm glad you're staying strong. You keep resting. You keep fighting. And
thank you.
Stay safe. You be safe. You be well.
Thank you so much.
And God bless you and your family. I'm sorry all this has happened to you with the mental health and all the things that was happened to you was horrible. It's horrible what you've been through, but I'm glad you're resting. I'm glad you're growing stronger, and I'm glad you're safe. I really am.
Absolutely.
Glad. I know.
And I believe that.
I really mean that, and I really hope and pray you get your children back. I pray to God that you do. For those of you who didn't listen to the first interview, Ms. Shante McLaughlin was in Atlanta, Georgia. A white psychiatrist took her off her medication. The way she got on medication is she was hit in the back of the head. She was walking around talking to herself that she'd been hit and mugged, robbed on the back of her head, I believe. She told me she was set up.
Yes.
She believed she might have been set up that was staged for her to be robbed. She's a very successful, educated black woman whose child is missing. She's had numerous businesses, worked in PR, number of degrees, a mother. More importantly than anything else, she's a mother. She has four kids. She only has two of them. Tell your story.
Yes. I have two of them. I have my oldest, who's 18, and I have my 7-year-old Gregory. He is one of my triplets. I delivered, I was in a bipolar 2 with psychosis episode, and I delivered triplets while incarcerated. 2 days, they took me back to jail, and I thought that my children, all three, had gone to my parents or with their dad or something, because I gave all of their names. I gave the names of friends. And it wasn't until I was being stabilized at Georgia Regional almost 2 years later that I found out that my children weren't with my family, that I found out they weren't with any of their friends, that I found out that Gregory was about to be adopted. And they told me that the other two, Malcolm and Melina, that I hallucinated them, and I hallucinated giving birth, and that they don't even exist. So imagine thinking that your children are with your family, and for 2 years they're actually just being rather. And while I was at Georgia Regional, my white psychiatrist, a different psychiatrist, my white psychiatrist, Dr. Farr, was trying to force me to take a plea deal because the judge ruled that I wasn't competent to stand trial since I was in a mental health crisis. And so while at Georgia Regional, like I said, she was trying to force me to take a plea deal of 5 years for charges that weren't mine, that didn't even have a victim assigned. And so when I asked the question of, if I'm not competent to stand trial, why would I be competent to take a plea deal? At that point, they start my Pakistanian social worker deemed that because I wasn't competent, that now I'm not competent to even go to juvenile court. So when Gregory was going to juvenile court, they wouldn't transport me to the juvenile courts either. So I missed 3 subpoena court dates because they kept saying that I wasn't competent to stand trial. And so a week after I came out of jail, I was served with papers to actually terminate my parental rights of the one child that I have. And long story short, I got him back 3 weeks before his 3rd birthday. With me being found, well, I wasn't found guilty or innocent. They just dead docketed my charges because there was no victim. And so since there was no victim, there was no reason to hold me, but they didn't clear up my record. They left the charges on my record. And so whenever I go protest or rally, I run the risk of being charged. There are 3 felonies, and it's frustrating. There's so many nuances to the system that I had no clue about, and it's really designed as a system of oppression, whether it's a part of dead dockets and why they even exist, which is really like double jeopardy, whether it's the fact that you can go to a mental health hospital where they can say you're not deemed to be mentally competent to come in a courtroom, but then they take you to a mental health hospital where they try to pressure you to take a plea deal, where if you're not competent to be in a courtroom, why would you take a plea deal in a hospital? And where they might bring in nursing students. That was the other thing. They would bring nursing students in the Georgia Regional, and we were required to talk to them. So on about 4 occasions, they had nursing students come because they wanted them to get the experience, but they'd ask us questions about our cases. I was on a forensic unit, and anything that you tell them could be used against you in court because they're not your lawyer. They're just students asking you questions about your case, which should be being totally illegal and immoral, but it's not. So, you know, as a person with lived experience with mental health, I definitely advocate around human trafficking, but I also advocate around ending the stigma of mental health and decriminalizing the homeless and the mentally ill, because there are too many people who are sitting in prison who are there because of, you know, just the atrocities of the system and the fact that it's designed for us, but it's not designed for us to win. And it's designed to keep us oppressed.
I know mental illness is a big thing. I know people have been having a gaslight in me. I've had to break away from a lot of people and cut a lot of ties because of mental illness. I had to, in order to survive mentally. I had to break ties and just stop having contact with people. I've stopped having contact with a lot of people for a lot of years, just so I could survive. I couldn't
absolutely
the verbal abuse from people because I had a mental illness. I wouldn't deal with it. I won't deal with it.
Mm-hmm.
The verbal abuse,
absolutely.
The cussing out stuff. I'm not gonna live that way.
Absolutely, I've lost clients that way. You know, I'm gonna do business with people, and they might go to raising their voice a little too much or flailing their. You know, I might go to do business with a man, and he's flailing his arms and raising his voice, and you know, the older I get, I don't need the whole bag of red flags. You know, I can see just enough to be triggered. And if I'm triggered in the second or third meeting, it doesn't take as long for me to get out of situations where in my 20s or my teen years I might have been stuck, but not at 44. You know, when you see the signs, leave. And that's business or personal, because people will drag you to their level and beat you beneath them. So when you see the signs of abuse, verbal, emotional, mental, physical, financial, whatever, get out.
That's right. Whether it's a male or a female, it could be a relative. Get out. It could be a relative that's abusing you. You don't have to take it. You don't have to go around those people. You don't have to let those people around you just because you have a mental illness. You're a human being.
Yeah.
So, Ms. Shantae McLaughlin, you sound calm.
I had and have.
You sound like you're hurting, a little angry, but you sound calm. I'm glad to know that you're getting rest, and that you're safe and protected, like I said earlier. You be good to yourself. Get plenty of rest. Stay asleep. Enjoy the two children that you do have while you search for the others. Ma'am? Hello? Hello?
Can you hear me?
Hi. We dropped the call. I was just telling you, Ms. McLaughlin.
Yeah.
I don't know
what happened, but I was saying, even when it comes to old friends, I don't let old friends make me feel a certain kind of way about my mental health, because they'll say things like, it might be a class reunion, family reunion, college reunion, wedding, just anything. And they'll say, oh, I was talking to such and such, and they said they had to do this for you because you have mental health. You know, like anytime when I have a quote-unquote friend who's recreating all of my stories of mental illness, I feel that's low. That's very low class and a low blow. Anytime that you have to make fun of someone with mental illness, or recreate a story to empower yourself.
Yes.
So.
That's right. That's a low blow when a person has another. It's called gaslighting also. They gaslight mentally ill people, family do it, friends or so-called friends do it. That's low. Low class. Low blow.
Yep. So I heard a countdown. Is it time?
Yes, ma'am. It's time.
Well, I just want to say thank you for inviting me on your show.
Yes, they have. We actually have.
And, Ms. Elaine Brennan for the introduction.
14 more minutes. It'll record for 14 more minutes, but go ahead.
Oh, I heard 6 seconds. I said I was thanking you for having me on your show, and thanks to the Rebecca Project, Ms. Elaine Brennan, for the introduction.
You're more than welcome, and I will send you a copy of your interview.
Thank you.
Hey, Ms. Shantae McLaughlin, you be at peace. Try to be at peace, okay?
Yes, ma'am, Ms. Butler. Peace and blessings to you.
I look forward to reading those books and getting a signed autographed copy.
All right. Bye.
And Ms. Riddick was supposed to come on my show this week, but she's been. But Ms. Elaine Riddick has been ill. She could not come on my show this week.
Understood.
Yes, ma'am. So you be good. God bless
you. You too.
You're an intelligent black woman. You just remember that, okay?
Yes, ma'am. I will.
You've been listening to Ms. Shantae McLaughlin. Ms. Shantae McLaughlin is a successful young woman who has a mental illness. She's been through it. People have taken advantage of her and stole her children. Low down, nasty. Evil. Just plain evil. Plain evil. It's what they did is evil. there in Georgia. Atlanta Grady Hospital is a mental ward for those of you who don't know it. She was accused of some crimes. She was pregnant. Like I said, now think about it, everyone. If you are in a mental ward, how can you take a plea deal? If you're not competent to stand trial, they stole this woman's children, told her she hallucinated it. Two babies. She had triplets. I did not ask her what a father was. I didn't want to cause her any pain. But she's an intelligent, educated black woman, beautiful and intelligent, educated. It's just she was taken advantage of by mental illness, and some white psychiatrists, lady psychiatrists, did her like that. So, you know, you have to be careful. When people find out something is wrong with you, you have a mental illness. Sometimes people abuse people with mental illnesses. So you have to be careful and protect yourself. Hers is the extreme case, though. Extreme case. They took the lady's children from her, took her babies, who are now 7 years old. Do you know how that must hurt her? How she must feel? Anyway, she doesn't have a GoFundMe. But if she comes, when she comes back on, because I am going to invite her back on, she'll talk with Angela Butler, see if she wants to have a GoFundMe. All right, everyone, this lady is looking for her children. Ms. Shantae McLaughlin, Atlanta, Georgia, you all. And Atlanta, Georgia is supposed to be the Mecca for black people, but it's still a city. People still take advantage of people. People still use and abuse people. But it did, Ms. Shantae McLaughlin. All right, everyone, thank you for listening to Show Talk with Angela Butler.